Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco, Dr. Esther Chu, and Dana Schwartz join me to tackle the following questions. What is pandemic life like for an emergency room doctor? How do we combat loneliness during a time of forced separation? What happens to your brain when you watch all four Rocky movies in a short period of time? All this and more, starting right now. Hey, everybody. Do you ever feel like you're stuck on a tarmac waiting to take off and the pilot keeps getting on the loudspeaker telling you you're waiting for a mechanical problem to be fixed and he has no estimate for how long it's going to take? And every time somebody tries to get up and go to the bathroom, the flight attendants yell at them because we're on an active runway, except we're not moving at all? I brought that up for no reason at all. Here to discuss the beginning of month two of all this, my friend, former White House Deputy Chief of Staff to President Barack Obama and full-on prairie wife, Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Erin?
Alyssa?
Oh, hey, girl!
Greetings from the United Western Kingdom of Sierra Nevada. Our alliance greets the Kingdom of the East.
I send you tidings from the Kingdom of Subaru here in the East Coast.
Oh, man, I love that. The Kingdom of Subaru.
And I've got one.
I mean, unsurprising. Haven't seen it, but I believe you. I think it's been interesting in the utter failure of our federal government to do what a federal government is supposed to do during a federal emergency. The states are banding together in these awesome sounding kingdoms of coolness, like Washington, Oregon, California. We're all united. And then out east,
let me just tell you, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, we have a bipartisan coalition. Delaware, Massachusetts joined on last night, Connecticut and Rhode Island.
Wow.
That's where we are so far.
And then, in the mythical Middle West of the country, we have a bunch of Great Lakes states becoming the Kingdom of the Lakes. And together, the three of us will, I don't know,
encircle the problem in South Dakota and the ham farm.
We should, I mean, we will be referring to the Dakotas as the problem. We're combining them into one state and calling them the problem. No.
They're just Dakota at this point. They haven't earned separation.
You know, and it is 100% because of the people in charge of those states, not because of the people who live there or the states themselves. Because both Dakotas, I think, are very underrated, beautiful places to visit, go camping, go hiking. The people
yes.
there are pretty nice. The people in charge are just idiots.
The leaders are stuck on stupid.
Yeah. And if they just replace those people with cooler people, maybe they could join their own kingdom and call it like Kingdom of the Wheat or something like that.
Because all any kingdom wants to be at this point is COVID negative.
Exactly. So we have to have a conversation with an actual medical professional. We've been meaning to do this for quite some time, but they are understandably pretty busy. So a treat for us this week, Alyssa, is we get to talk to Dr. Esther Chu, who is an outspoken advocate for public health, and she is an ER doctor, and she is a mother of four kids. So let's get to our interview with Esther Chu, and then after the interview, we're going to come back with a couple of toasts and get you out of the news. Esther, thank you so much for being here. We've wanted you on the show for quite some time, and I'm glad it finally worked out. So thank you. But first and foremost, I want to ask you, how is your family? How are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm good. I mean, we're really lucky here in Oregon because we've, knock on wood, cross our fingers, have been mostly successful in flattening the curve. So, you know, I'm home with four kids. My husband also works in the hospital. So we definitely have some baseline anxiety about keeping everybody safe and just making it mentally through this now that school has been closed for the rest of the year. But I think we have nothing to complain about. But thank you.
Mm-hmm. And tell us what you're seeing apart from four kids who are probably getting a little stir crazy.
They are. Yeah, I mean, there will never be a stranger time than this. There has never been anything like this for us. I mean, not even close. I'm in emergency medicine, so we're used to disasters. You know, we're used to mass casualties. We're used to really big national events that have health consequences, you know, natural disasters. Like, that's kind of what we're wired to. It's not that they're not horrible. It's just that that's why we're here, you know? So there's always this element of kind of bring it and we're ready. This is just so different. I mean, first of all, it's affecting everybody everywhere, you know? So we don't have a colleague anywhere that is not impacted by this some way. So we're all kind of going through this together. And we also realize that our regular disaster response systems are really built around discrete events, you know, big bus overturning or, you know, a mass casualty. It's not built around this kind of sustained national casualty that really can hit anybody at any time. How does any disaster preparedness be sufficiently ready for something like that? So, I mean, we are in absolutely wild preparation mode around this thing because we have to walk through on the hospital level. We have to walk through what if this, you know, so we have all these stages of readiness. Like if we are, have a little surge versus a moderate surge versus absolutely, you know, crisis surge where we totally exceed our resources. So, I mean, basically the entire, I'm trying to remember when we started all this. I mean, certainly since March, we've been in really daily nonstop planning and building in, you know, everything that we need to respond to this. I mean, we built a whole new section of our emergency room. I mean, that's something that takes years of planning. We just built it. I mean, it just happened because that's what we're anticipating that we need. So work is very strange. And at the same time, I mean, we're certainly seeing a good number of people who either have COVID-19 or have a COVID-like illness. So we need to test them and work them out and figure out what to do with them. Work them up. But everything else has gone away. You know, So because people are terrified to come into the hospital. So, I mean, I tend to work weekend overnights. I mean, that's a trauma role. You know, I expect trauma after trauma for my entire shift. It's gone because if you're staying at home and you're social distancing, you're not going to parties, you're not drinking, you're not getting into cars, you're not making all kinds of bad decisions that might land you in the emergency room. So that makes sense. What's really weird is where are the heart attacks? Where are the strokes? We're not seeing really much of anything. So I think people are staying home. So that's the weirdness of my life at work right now.
Mm-hmm. Esther, you're talking to so many doctors and nurses and physicians assistants across the country. And I think that so many of us are still very confused by the news we're getting. Do you still hear from medical staff that they're still wanting for PPEs and gowns? Is there still concern over ventilators? Tell us what you're hearing.
Yeah, all of this is an issue. And I think one of the reasons you'll hear so many different things is that this is a slow moving wave, you know, so you have people in all different stages of this pandemic, even just in our country, you know, so you have the New York and the New Orleans and the Seattle, where they're at peak or even past peak. And then you have these cities that are emerging as the next hot zones or peaks. So DC, Boston, Chicago, you know, but when it's this slow moving wave, if you're inclined to be an optimist and you want to hear good news, you can find some hospital somewhere where they're, you know, where they're sitting around and they're just fine in their PPE and they're not experiencing a huge patient surge of COVID-19. So I think especially if you're on the internet and you're selective about what information you want, you can find corroboration for a lot of different theories. But, you know, but taking these cities as kind of the canaries in the coal mine, everybody needs to take this seriously. And I think we're also just simply not hearing from places that don't have population density, that don't have interest from news outlets. You know, I think there's a lot actually going on quietly in rural areas where there's just no fanfare about it and people are just quietly dying at home. I mean, we see that a lot in our Oregon news. I mean, if you look at the death announcements, it's like so-and-so, 70 years old, died at her home in, and they list this kind of, you know, rural or more remote location. I think it's really happening in places that we just don't pay attention to. So, this is, and at hospitals, we're running out of everything. And I mean, these are things that we don't keep in deep stock. You know, it's not like the average hospital is like, let's just to be sure, have enough stock that if all the staff are wearing them and we're putting them on patients too, that we'll have enough for a year. You know, that's just not the way we stock these things. These are sometimes used things, not for the average patient that we see, that the supply chain is such that we keep it in stock for maybe like a month or two or three. And now all of a sudden we need to be wearing these all the time because asymptomatic people can transmit disease. We don't know where this disease is coming from. And we realize that, oh, not only do we not plan to have a deep supply, we have never planned to have to ratchet up that supply chain really quickly and at scale around the world. That's just not a thing. So, it's going to be continue to be a problem. And the same thing with ventilators and everything that goes along with a ventilator, and the same thing for medications, by the way, very, very tragically.
So I know you have enough to worry about, but do you watch the Trump pressers? And if you do, is anything he says, even in the same zip code, as true?
I watch sometimes. It very much depends on where I feel like I am emotionally and psychologically that day, because it is never not upsetting. Never. And because I'm so close to it, sometimes I just have to watch it through the filter of social media or friends giving me an encapsulated version later. I mean, we take turns. Like, I have friends where I'm like, I cannot do it today because I've seen, you know, I have too many friends who are sick, or, you know, you have something really, you have a colleague in your specialty who dies and you're like, I cannot watch that today because I know the failures that led to that death or that severe illness, or my friends, you know, whoever, dying. And so, I have a whole network of people where we're like, you know, one person will be like, I'm in a good place today. I'll watch it today and I'll filter out. Because, I mean, we have to know, because every time something is said, like when it, you know, something is dropped so casually, like hydroxychloroquine looks like it has 100% efficacy. And it's like, we have to know, because then I have to change, we all have to change our public health messaging. You know, we have to come out really strong and correct some of these things and say, please do not do the thing that I think you're going to do, because something that was said yesterday and then amplified across, you know, the entire country. It's not possible. I mean, there was a phase in my life between, you know, that hazy time between 2016 election and COVID-19 pandemic, where you could tune out if you wanted to for self-preservation. But now it's like, you have to listen so that you can do what we need to do, you know, our public health duty. So I'm listening. I listen for Fauci, obviously. I listen to Strategize, but there's just very little that's helpful, while there is a lot that's extremely upsetting.
So some researchers, like you mentioned before, are saying that the New York curve is flattening, and Trump is talking about opening America up. It seems to change every single day. Yeah. Does setting a goal for May to open America up for business seem in any way reasonable to you?
No. I mean, I think opening is a very complicated and interesting topic. I mean, I think there's going to be like reopening scientists who come out of this, because it requires so much skill and knowledge. And actually, we're going to be studying this as we have natural experiments around the country of different ways to open. And clearly there's going to be some bad reopening that leads to a second surge and a third surge and a fourth surge. But I think, I mean, Gavin Newsom came out with a statement yesterday. It was either yesterday or like 5 years ago, because time has no meaning at all. But I believe it was yesterday in traditional time, where he talked about how the Western states would coordinate their reopening, and how it really relies on testing, having adequate PPE for healthcare workers, and also that it's not binary. It's not an on-off switch. And I think that is the most important part. Like, we're all eager to reopen. I am so eager to get out of this house. Please, summer camps open, because I have four kids and they are so wonderful and they're driving us nuts. But, but I think reopening will have to be in a setting where we have a ton of testing and we know what is happening as we open in stages. So we open up some kinds of services. I think we will still limit large gatherings for long periods of time. But I think we will open up gradually, test as we go, pull back the minute we see an uptick, we see a signal, because we're testing adequately, we see a signal, we pull back and go back into stay-at-home orders, and we might have to retreat to essential workers only in some areas. But I mean, this is where it's going to have to really be a state regional, local effort, you know, that's very responsive and is tracking data in real time. It'll be completely fascinating, but this is not going to be easy.
Esther, how far do you think the United States is from the testing capability required to even start to phase open the country?
I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling how far behind we've gotten in testing. I mean, the only reason we're here with stay-at-home orders is because we didn't do early testing. And so, I mean, I spent a lot of time the other day on these Red Dawn documents. Did you? Oh my gosh. I mean, really, I read those 80 documents, like that was like Stephen King to health professionals and public health people everywhere. You know, it was like a Stephen King novel where you just, every page you're like, this is so horrifying. I can't read this in the dark. You know, it was just, It was wild. But I mean, what I got out of it mostly was that there was this window in January and February where tests needed to happen with total abandon. You know, we needed to be South Korea. And then as every week goes by and then that, we retreat to, okay, that opportunity is so missed that we just have to go wholeheartedly to NPI, you know, to these non-pharmaceutical interventions, which basically means stay-at-home orders and other types of containment. And as you get deeper in the document, you're like, it's just waves upon waves of missed opportunity with testing. And to the point where, you know, people can't even, it's even hard to just understand what all the barriers are. There's so many and complicated, but how do we scale from having gotten so far behind to where we need to be? I don't know. I mean, I can't even put a date on it. We are just so massively behind. So, will we get to the point where we can open? I mean, I think in the absence of testing at the scale that we need it to be, you know, for our huge population, I think this is where we're going to have to really rely on our already depleted public health workforce, but we're just going to have to roll out testing in really smart and strategic ways. You know, I mean, there's some really interesting sampling things that you can do. You know, there's some innovations that are centered around, unfortunately, around symptoms, but still, you know, these trackers, these community trackers for symptoms where you can kind of approximate what testing does. I think we'll have select views of serology so we can see who's kind of past disease and make estimates about, you know, how much a community has already been infected and you know, and kind of think about whether there are kind of local herd immunity approaches we might take. But I don't really know the answer. I don't know that we'll ever get to adequate compared to like what we know we need and needed.
So here's a question. I try to be very responsible on Twitter and get information from only people who I think are very fact-based.
Yeah.
But I have definitely followed one or two people who someone very smart came after me and was like, that person's a quack, like don't talk to them. So who are some of the best people you follow or news sources that you get your information from that other people can use as reference also?
Well, one of the magical things that's happened on Twitter is they have started to verify health experts and public health professionals and epidemiologists. And so it's gotten so much easier to follow. You know, I basically will scan and look for people who I think are posting smart stuff. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are jumping on bandwagons. Like I was following somebody the other day who was verified, who was a physician, and then they started talking about putting everybody in the hospital, in the pre-hospital setting on Plaquenil. This is hydroxychloroquine, just like prophylactically with no evidence. And I was like, whoa, what's happening here? You know? And it actually was like a bunch of my peers started flagging. So I think it takes homework. You know, I think you have to kind of read and be like, huh, that sounds off, or look at what the commentary is from other people who are verified and have, you know, and have credentials that back up their knowledge. But it's not, I mean, the misinformation, unfortunately, is not limited to non-medical, non-health professional people. You know, even some of my peers, I mean, some of it was honest, you know, I mean, some of us were prognosticating in January and February, and we were just wrong. You know, I mean, we knew so little about this disease. We were basing what we knew off other pandemics, when actually this one has not followed the rules in a lot of ways and has been a particularly crafty and evil virus. And so we simply didn't know how bad it would get. So there's some of that's kind of honest, poor prognosticating. But I think there's also people who are just, I don't know what the motivation is, but they're definitely pushing out things that don't feel at all evidence-based and are kind of fanning these flames of hysteria. is that what we're here to talk about? I can talk about hysteria, but, you know, sort of fanning these, like, you know, our natural human impulse to kind of follow panic. And, you know, it's like, I've been comparing everything to the toilet paper thing. It's like, why did people run out and get toilet paper? You know, it's like, there's a lot of toilet paper analogies in healthcare where people are running out and hoarding certain medications and supplies in a way that's really harmful across the community. And I see why they're doing it. I think sometimes we, even the medical community, can contribute to that kind of behavior. So anyway, it takes a lot of active filtering. I don't think I've unfollowed as many people as as I have during this pandemic, because it's just painful to read some of the things that are being pushed out. And also, so many people who clearly feel comfortable speaking with total authority, even though they have zero health, you know, health or public health background. It's amazing. That has just astonished me.
Yeah, I used to work in a newsroom where every single time there was a new crisis, there was this one guy who was suddenly like, oh, you're the expert on southern hemisphere hurricanes now? I didn't know that. Oh, now you're an epidemiologist. Oh, cool. Now you know all about earthquakes. You know, one thing that is a little refreshing in this extremely weird moment is that I feel like medical professionals have a lot lower tolerance for bullshit than political professionals. And so it's nice to see the bullshit be called out. You're talking about you and your colleagues getting together and saying like, well, we're flagging this. This is incorrect. Like in politics, people would just kind of grumbly like subtweet it at each other. And so it's actually kind of refreshing that people are standing up for the truth and facts in this time where things are super weird. I don't want to take any more of your time, but I want to close by asking, so what are some ways that people who don't work in the medical field can support people who do now and in the aftermath of the pandemic, besides, you know, clapping out of our windows at 8 p.m.?
The clapping helps, I have to say. I mean, there is a morale piece to this because we're basically going into this thing with no end, you know? But I think, I mean, there's so many ways to help. I honestly think, though, that right now I'm very focused on getting people to help in any way they can in their community, because there are all these things that all of us are really worried about that we just can't get to because we're very, very sucked into the hospital right now, you know? And so normally, I think in any other circumstance in a crisis like this, I would be really out there trying to figure out how do we help the elderly in our communities? You know, who's watching out for the people who can't even get to the grocery store right now, or who really are at high risk if they just go out and run simple errands? How can we protect them? What are we doing about low-wage workers who are earning nothing right now? You know, what are we doing for essential workers who have to go out there, but they're not given all the PPE that healthcare workers are even? I mean, we're in short supply. It's like people are being sent out to these jobs where they have high surface area contact and there's no PPE for them at all. And they're taking disease back to their families. And so, I mean, everything else, like any need in your community, whether it's hunger or shelter or diaper bank or watching out for an elderly neighbor, it's like those functions, they have to be done by, you know, by everybody else, because we are so just about, you know, ramping up care capacity in hospitals. So some of those public health functions that are kind of at the bridge between the community and the healthcare system, that's being a little neglected right now by us. And that's where just the entire community at large needs to step in and fill those gaps. That's healthcare too. That's generally on our plate too. We just cannot attend to it. So that's what I'm asking people to do, is just look around the community. And if you're in a good spot, try to fill that need. Sometimes that can be done by just a little bit of volunteer work or a little bit of cash flow for nonprofit organizations that simply have no way to raise funds right now.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa, anything else?
No, just big thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And if you listen really hard, you might be able to hear me clapping at 8 p.m. tonight.
LA. Thank you guys for what you do. You know how much I love your podcast. It has given me a lot to think about and always makes me laugh, which is why I listen.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you so much, Esther Chu, and good luck today. And thank you for everything. Let's get to some toasts. Is that cool with you? Because this week has...
Let's toast.
This week has been the worst week.
Shit burger.
So I don't know why. I've just spent, like, I've had... I experienced... Okay, I watched Karate Kid 2 and I cried during it. Because I was like, I wish I could go to Japan. That was why I cried.
I have started watching Christmas movies because, like, I thought they... Well... Let's say I started watching Christmas movies. I've stopped because even the worst ones were making me cry. And I was feeling very like emotionally exhausted after, I forget the name of it. It was, who was it? I don't even remember. I don't even remember who was in it, but it was sad. But it wasn't supposed to be. Oh, it was like Diane Keaton and John Goodman and Olivia Wilde. And I forget what it was called, but I don't think it was supposed to elicit the tears that it did.
Oh, yeah. It's just been dark. So I want to toast some things in addition to our states doing the work that the federal government is supposed to do and our governors actually stepping up where people in charge are not stepping up. I have a toast. I have a toast for a woman in the Kingdom of the Lakes. The mayor of Chicago is I'm quoting a news source here, a stern lesbian named Lori Lightfoot, who is so serious about Chicagoans staying home, self-isolating, and respecting public health guidelines around COVID-19 that a couple weeks ago, she personally drove her car around to yell at people who were gathering outside and having a social gathering. Now, the people of Chicago have responded to their mayor being a real, like, killjoy by completely embracing and falling in love with her. She's become, if you want to, like, have some joy in the afternoon, look up Lori Lightfoot memes. It's been a couple weeks now. And two of my roommates from college actually live in the Chicago area. And one of them, our entire text conversation has been Lori Lightfoot memes back and forth. She sent me a picture of somebody had printed out a picture of Lori Lightfoot looking stern at a press conference.
And put her on the lawn?
There was the lawn one, but I saw it stuck in a fridge and it said, "You just ate," underneath the picture of Lori.
That's funny as hell.
Yeah. People have been calling her auntie. People have been kind of treating her as this like kind of patron saint of doing the best thing for your community in this dark time. And she's also like, you know, she's a good mayor. She really loves the city of Chicago and the memes are hilarious and she knows about them and she's kind of leaned into it. And so a toast to Lori Lightfoot, mayor of Chicago, and to the people of Chicago, a city where I once lived and that I still love very much. So that's my toast for the week.
I love Chicago too. I lived there for many years. And so my toast is to Melissa DeRosa. Melissa DeRosa is the assistant to Governor Cuomo. Now, she's not his assistant. It's a position called assistant to the governor. Mm-hmm. And she is essentially running the New York State response to COVID. And she sits next to him. You've probably seen her. She sits next to him in almost all the press conferences. Whenever he can't answer something, she's like, bing, 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 and has all the answers. And, you know, so many people like Melissa are always just like in the background, getting all the work done. And she's just fucking crushing it. And I thought everyone should know the governor has singled her out as the person who's essentially running the response. And so and she's like our age. And I just fucking think she should get a shout out because she's literally getting up every morning at 3 o'clock and going to bed at like 11. And, you know, like Esther was saying, there is no way that people can keep doing this nonstop. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like, I want to support her because she has no end in sight.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good toast this week. Alyssa, stick around. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will be joined by a third person via Zoom and we will have a new conversation about things that aren't the news.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food,
And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And we're back with more hysteria. We've reached the part of the show where we're like a Brady Bunch tic-tac-toe board of two interesting people and me. There's Alyssa Mastromonaco, who you guys heard in the last segment. And we are joined now for the first time in a while, and thank goodness, by Dana Schwartz. Dana, welcome back.
Hi, I'm so happy to be back. I wish I could have been in person.
Yeah, same. Who knows how long that'll be? It's going to be a while. I've been eating candy for lunch, guys.
Oh, meals have no meaning for me anymore.
Okay, Alyssa, I heard a rumor about you and some peeps.
I'm not going to lie. I limit the amount I go to the grocery store. I go only when we need essentials. And the other day I bought not only a bag of marshmallows, but like the on sale post Easter peeps, and they're gone. There's not a peep left in the pack.
You ate the whole thing.
I did. They're delicious. They're fat free. Haven't we heard that before?
Oh my God.
My go-to has been, dried mango, which I eat at a pace that is not human and not healthy for my digestive system.
You're capable of getting into a Trader Joe's?
It's the Whole Foods.
Oh.
Whole Foods right by my house. It's subpar to the Trader Joe's quality. But, you know, it's a pandemic where I'm making sacrifices.
Yeah. I mean, the Trader Joe's near me, the last we were like, maybe we should go to Trader Joe's and get some of that frozen food that we like to pretend to make. And the line was like completely all the way around the store. It was like a nightclub. It's like, I'm not waiting in line for the grocery store. I can't even get drunk in there. But yeah. So we have been doing this for a little under a month now, this social isolation thing. And it feels like it's probably going to go on for at least several more months intermittently. And this week is the week where I about hit a wall. And I was like, you know, I call it math tears. Even though I used to be like, I was good at math, but there's like a feeling of not being able to solve a math problem. That's what I felt all week. It's just like this, just intense math tears. How long is this going to go? When is it over? And like, when can I see my friends and family again? And it really, really sucks. But it made me think that I think an issue that is a larger issue that matters in the context of this and beyond is the issue of loneliness. I think that a lot of people before the pandemic were experiencing it, and they're especially experiencing it now. And so let's get into it. I'm kind of tired of like exclusively pandemic content, but it's kind of impossible to not at least talk about it a little bit. So Dana, I'm going to put you on the spot since it's been the longest since I've seen you, but how are you feeling in terms of like loneliness or are you feeling like you're getting enough human interaction?
No, I'm not. Math tears, I feel like, is the perfect way to put it. So I live alone in like a studio apartment with a cat, and like most of all my family, like my three siblings and both my parents, are in Chicago. So I had that moment of like, do I just go to Chicago? Do I drive? Do I bring my cat? Like, what do I do? Like, just that like panic, like caged animal feeling of like, no, there's no realistic way. I'm staying here. But yeah, like I went through a breakup pretty recently, like you'd be, I mean, it's fine, but like you'd be lonely then under any circumstances, but now I can't go like drink with my friends or like go on distraction dates. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm just sort of like, yeah, like pacing and like trying to get into a routine. I'm very good at being alone because I'm a fundamentally lazy person, but I sort of also hit it this week. It was like the 1 month limit of like, oh no, I need to see another person and go to a restaurant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alyssa, how are you doing with like loneliness and all that?
I mean, thank God for you every Wednesday. I'm just number one.
Oh,
but
thanks.
No, I think it's like, I'm married. My husband's here. We're together nonstop. and it's not that I'm not lonely. And I don't want to be lonelier in a different way, but I think that, and it's not quite boredom because that's not it. I do have a routine. I still get up by 7 o'clock every morning. I make the coffee. I feed the cats. I have three because once I was very lonely and kept piling them up. And you know, I saw my neighbor. So we live in the city part of the time, but now we're up in Columbia County and we're in the middle of nowhere, but I have two neighbors and I saw one of the neighbors going for a walk. I was in the middle of doing the dishes. I left the dishwasher open. I had an apron on. I ran down the driveway to 12 feet from Eric and Ryan. And I was like, hey, you guys, what's up? And I talked to them for 45 minutes, safe distance. And all of a sudden, they're like, we think your husband's calling you. And I went home. And I went up back up the driveway. And David's like, where were you? And I'm like, where do you think I went? Like, the car is still here. Where'd you think I went? But it was like the most exciting thing that's happened in a long time. And I felt like I really just was happy to talk to people without a face mask on because, as I said, we were very distant. So my aerosoling of whatever it is was not going to happen.
Did you feel loneliness like before this, or is this sort of a new thing, Dana?
It's hard to parse out like the combination of like breakup and quarantine because those coincided really perfectly for me. But I am like a lonely person, I do think, because I kind of am like an I'm like an indoor cat. So I sort of isolate, but it's a new and different thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, like I am someone who gets lonely, but like, I still was like going to a job every day and seeing people and driving to work and going to a coffee shop. Like I like to work alone, but surrounded by other people. So like I would go to like a coffee shop and work in the coffee shop. And like, I knew the baristas and like saw people. So it's like, I miss those mundane interactions too. Like I'm still having like long phone calls with my mom and sisters and friends. I still have a cat here who's teetering around the microphone. But yeah, I missed like going to a job and seeing people and like going to a coffee shop and going to a restaurant. Yeah, like you don't realize you miss those interactions until you lose them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a specific type of like urban interaction because I'm a little bit like that too, where I grew up in such a small town where it's like you can't see anybody without having a fucking conversation. And like, different types, you know, different strokes, different folks. But I was never the type of person who was like, who loved like chit chat or hemming and hawing, as we would maybe call it in a small town. And when I got to live, when I grew up and moved to cities, the thing that I liked the most was that I was in a big group of people and none of them were bugging me.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah. And like, it was so luxurious. Now looking back on it and missing things like walking down the sidewalk and just kind of like looking at what people are wearing and like looking at their dogs and taking a look at, you know, who's hanging out in this, you know, cafe that I sometimes get something to go from, like who's around, what are they doing? Like I just moved into a new neighborhood, not just, but like 6 months ago. And I was getting to the point where I was like starting to know people on a, like, see them on the street wave kind of basis. And now it's sort of like, not really. I mean, I still will sometimes see people if I go out, but it's much more rare. And it's usually just them walking and they have the mask on. So you can't tell if they're smiling or like frowning. And it's just all very blah.
Like I loved, like, you know, when I lived in New York, like that feeling of walking down the street or being on the subway or going to a museum and being like alone, but surrounded by strangers. Mm-hmm. Like that is very comforting to me, that feeling for some reason. And now it does feel very Twilight Zone, end of the world. Like, you know, I live in a building that like, I haven't seen my neighbors in a while. Cause we just haven't like, you know, gone out at the same time, I guess. I haven't like, you know, I see strangers on the street, but like you said, everyone's wearing a mask where it's like fundamentally isolating because you could have been in like a post-pandemic world, like a time enough at last situation where you, in theory, you could be the last person alive.
Yeah. Well, watch to the very end of that one, Dana, because it ends pretty poorly for him.
You know what, Aaron? I have 20/20 vision. I'll be fine. I don't wear glasses.
What if we all, instead of wearing like medical masks, which are kind of scary, what if we all started wearing like Halloween masks? Would that make it better? Like if you saw a bunch of like, you know, Ronald Reagan's and Dan Quayle's, I don't know why I picked those out of all the rubber masks, but started seeing them walking down the street. Would it make you laugh?
Dan Quayle.
I don't know if I would recognize a Dan Quayle mask on sight.
I would. My parents had a Dan Quayle, like there was a Halloween that they went as like Republican royalty. Like my mom went as Nancy Reagan for Halloween and my dad had a rubber Ronald Reagan mask.
What?
Yeah.
That's
like
awesome.
Yeah. When they were cute. Like very, very young. My mom was Nancy Reagan for Halloween.
I feel like then it would just start feeling like the Purge. Like I would be scared that someone's going to like loot my house.
Yeah.
Everyone's in scary rubber masks.
That's what you're scared of in the Purge is the looting. That's the, I mean, they're doing worse things than looting, Dana. They're doing all kinds.
Are they though? There's like, the only Purge movie I've seen is the one where they build a giant guillotine. And I'm like, that's a lot of forethought and effort for like minimal one person at a time death. That seemed to be like a very organized, you know, well thought out death. And so I will not see any more Purge movies and I'll just keep that in my head forever.
Here's something I was thinking about this week, Alyssa. I feel like I'm kind of like very attuned to when I feel like people are displaying emotions that I recognize myself as displaying. Do you think that Donald Trump is like, when I get real obnoxious, it's because I'm lonely. Usually it's like, I'm trying to get it. Do you think Donald Trump is lonely right now? Do you think that's why he's doing all this stuff?
So Aaron, I'm going to go with his acting out this week is sort of a version of math tears. That, like, he straight can't get the answer. He's like, it's not going to happen. It's not in his brain. And he's incapable of like intake, of being like, that's a good idea from someone else. Maybe I will talk to them about it. So I think he's more like math tearsing it because he just doesn't have any answers, because he's a germaphobe. I'm sure he'd be fucking fine if he didn't see people as long as they clapped for him once in a while outside.
Well, that's the thing, is he can't get his rallies. He can't like refresh and recharge.
Yeah,
with,
that's
like,
true.
An echo chamber. He needs that echo chamber every once in a while just to get a little tune up.
And that was one of the first things I texted Alyssa when this was starting to all go south. I was like, you know what? This is going to take away everything President Trump loves. He can't have his rallies anymore if this actually becomes a big thing. And it's true. Now he's like just open miking in front of a hostile press.
And he'll never wear, I mean, this is just my own theory. Like, he hates looking weak. I can't imagine he'll ever wear a mask or want to be photographed with a mask, which is a bad thing, or like gloves. I feel like he wants to always project strength. So anything that forces him to look vulnerable.
But his mouth and his hands are his two worst features. This is an opportunity for him to cover up both of them.
He could wear giant gloves.
He could wear, yes, like Ronald or like Mickey Mouse gloves or like Hulk hands. He could wear Hulk hands and give his press conferences that way. Pivoting back to loneliness. One thing that I was thinking about a lot this week is that, you know, coronavirus is sort of like a giant viral plate of shishito peppers that is getting passed around, and we all take one, and one out of every like 20 person gets a pepper so hot they almost die. But at the same time, you know, loneliness is something that is very unhealthy. How do you think a post or like a not post, but post first wave of this pandemic, like mental health? How do you think people will address their mental health after this? Do you think that they will, or do you think we're like on the verge of like a giant national mental health crisis?
I think that we're probably in the middle of it and don't know it. I don't know if you guys saw this the other day, but Taraji P. Henson started a virtual therapy app, I guess it is, for the Black community, where you can text No Stigma to 707070 so that people can talk about what's happening and how they're feeling. So I think that this is definitely, I mean, look, we have nothing but time to stare at ourselves in the mirror. And I mean, I'm not Donald Trump or any of his extended family. I don't look in the mirror and be like, you are so fucking hot and smart. You are amazing. No, I'm like, you should really be using this time, Alyssa, to come up with things you're going to do after you got fired from everything else and come up with a plan. And it's like not a very creative environment to come up with plans. So I think that people, especially like, at least I have David or the cats to be like, you're being fucking ridiculous right now. Like, just calm down and stop. But like, I think that, you know, especially for people who don't have someone who can kind of like check them a little bit, I think that we're all sort of talking to ourselves a lot and maybe not the most positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I think the main problem is I'm spending, and I have a cat right here, Beetlejuice, get out of there, so much time on a screen, like more than ever, whether I'm just like staring at my phone aimlessly or watching TV or on my computer, because that's sort of the only form of human contact I'm getting, or like validation or feedback. Like Twitter is now so much more important because that feels like a little community. You're like, ah, people. Where that is never healthy for my mental health. It always leaves me feeling very drained. And then the things that made me feel good were like, just like relaxing and spending time with a friend in person without that pressure. And I even think that like Zoom calls don't fulfill that function for me, because for me, like when I'm on like a Zoom, when I'm like, oh, let's catch up with a friend, let's Skype, it feels like a very, you have to be on, and it feels like a very focused time, where I like, like the unfocused time with a friend, like being able just to like sit on a couch and do nothing together, mm-hmm. where like, let's catch up, me and you, here we are face to face, because it's so like discreet, like ETE, it feels like another chore. And so I think that I don't know how we're going to handle it, or maybe once we're able to start socializing again, it'll go away. But that for me has been the biggest hurdle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found myself getting like a little bit anxious before Zoom calls. Like, I got to have a meeting. It's like the feeling of
100%.
It's like, I want so badly to interact with people, but then when it's time, I'm like, I don't know. Should I put it off? Should I do it some other time? I don't know. And it's like, cause they're not, yeah, like you're saying, Dana, they're not like a normal interaction, and it doesn't really substitute.
Yeah. I do not like Zoom calls. I get Zoom FOMO, like the idea that other people are like having fun on Zoom calls and I'm not. But I don't like the pressure of like being on and like, hi, here's my computer screen, this is us. Like, it feels like a weird like first date or something, mm-hmm. even with like friends that I've known for a while.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't agree more, Erin, other than of course you. Whenever I am summoned to a Zoom situation, I literally think about it for hours beforehand. And I'm like, okay, so should I just say something came up, but it's like a pandemic and I'm in the house, so is anything really going to come up? Like, is that even feasible? Is that even like a reasonable excuse? And it's like, and then I get really worked up. And it is true. It's like when you're on Zoom, you're smiling, like your face yeah. muscles are stiff or sore when you're done. And it feels a bit fake. Right? It feels like super forced and fake, even though like you want to see people, but like, I hate the phone too. Really, I'm just super into email and texting, mm-hmm. but like, you know, you have to check in on people. And there are people who, I have several friends who had COVID or have COVID, and you want to like see them to make sure that they're really okay. Right. And once I do, I'm like, all right, cool. I'll talk to you later. Let me know if you need anything.
Especially those like big mass Zoom calls, because only one person really can talk at a time. So it's not like you can like have side conversations and make small talk. You have to be like really awkwardly waiting to be the next person to hold the floor. which is a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do? You put your finger up. You're like, I'm next. Are you raising your hand? Like, what do?
And I think if you, among your friends, you know how their face looks when they're excited to say something. And so like, I can see Dana and I can see you, Alyssa. So I know how both of you look when you're like, I have a point to make. And so you can naturally like put an ebb in the conversation. And with other people, it's like, are you gonna, is it time for you to?
It's like the hokey pokey. It's like one foot in and one foot out.
And yet this is all we have to combat loneliness, except I was reading this week that a lot of people are looking for like a quarantine bay. And I've seen a lot of people talking about like, oh, it's going to be a fuck fest when this is all over. I guess Dana, to put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot.
Do you see that among other people? Have you made any like contacts with people that maybe seemed like they were dating type overtures, or are people just kind of inside for now and waiting to be outside and do that out there?
I have definitely had like dating type overtures with people, but it's also then hard to say whether then when the option of being in person, whether it's going to completely disintegrate, whether the excitement is all just the idea of it. But for me, so like I, you know, have been on the apps or like, you know, I've texted a few people. But it fizzles very quickly because there's no way to know if you have in-person chemistry. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can talk to someone and maybe 1 in 100 people you'll talk to and you're like, this is amazing. But for most people I have found, you can like make small talk via text or phone. And until you meet in person and figure out if you're like vibing together in a normal, natural way, you don't actually know if you want to date and or sleep with them. So it's a lot of like being polite to strangers and enjoying, you know, casual text conversations, but being like, I don't want to sustain this. I don't want to be like, you know, polite text acquaintances with a random guy I met on Bumble indefinitely.
That's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Like just the awkward small talk stage of a Bumble match forever.
Yeah. You know what is going to happen on the other side of all this, or in the next phase after all this? Is you're going to have on your birthday, Dana, like 12 texts from numbers you've deleted. And that's going to be like, hey, happy birthday. Because like birthdays are always opportunities for guys that you connected with on dating apps to check in to see if you're still available. Like, wait, who is this? Oh, it's, you know, Luke. We almost went on a date 3 years ago. Thanks, dude. But you're gonna have a real busy birthday text line after this.
I can't wait. The strange thing with these conversations is you get small bubbles of intimacy. Like you can go really deep with these people for like 1 or 2 long conversations. But again, because it's still like a stranger, it's difficult to maintain that. So it's like, here's a stranger who I've had, you know, 2 afternoons of genuine intimacy with. And then, but in the grand scheme of things, they are a stranger on the street to me. Like there's no sustained connection there.
But could you just, I mean, if it's not impossible for you to see each other in person, couldn't you just be like, I'm going to go to this corner, you go to the other side of the street at this time, and I'll wave at you and say hi.
Should I do that? Should I try to arrange like Bumble wave speed dating? I'll have one at each corner and I'll just like walk by.
Totally. But
that is something I'd watch on Zoom.
Please do that. Take me with you. Take both of us with you. I think that would be great.
You two are very, you know, politically tuned in. If I am wearing a mask and they're wearing a mask, can you like walk with someone? What's the level of interaction I can have?
I would still 6-foot distance with, don't forget your gloves.
Gloves, yes.
And a mask. And I would keep like a good distance, but you know, I feel like that's okay.
I feel like
it's like no different than going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
I feel like,
maybe you should meet at Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Oh, we have so much time waiting in line.
Yeah. It's
like, oh my God. It's like you can socially distance the line in. It'd be great.
And then
that's actually very cute.
Yeah, you should do that. I think that's it. Look, we've solved it, Dana. We solved your dating life.
Solved all the problems.
I'm going to make a Trader Joe's date. I'll report back on how it goes.
Oh my God. This is going to be must-see Zoom TV.
I feel like, you know, in a time that is maybe rolling social isolation for the next 2 years or until we have a vaccine, people are going to demand content. And that is going to truly be the next Tiger King.
Trader Joe's dating.
Exotic Trader Joe.
I've refused the Tiger King.
It's, you know what? This is going to be a pivot away from loneliness, but I watched that show only because I was stuck inside, whatever.
You know, I watched that show because, and it's not like my type of show at all. Again, because of the loneliness, because I wanted to feel like I was part of a community. I wanted to get the jokes. Like, the monoculture is so rare nowadays that it's like not everyone's watching Friends on a Thursday night or whatever it was, where it's like to have one thing that everyone is watching and talking about at the metaphorical water cooler made me feel less alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's why sports, I miss them so completely. And when they were on, I didn't really, like, I watch the NFL, or if there was a game on that was like interesting, I would watch it. But like the community, the collectiveness of watching something. But I watched Tiger King too, because I was like, well, I'm stuck inside. I want to participate. That show is, I'm going to, you know, put on my feminist pants, pretty misogynist. Carol Baskin does seem kind of crazy. And I wouldn't want to hang out with her, but I think that she's trying to do good work, and she is not, and it is not fair that they gave Joe Exotic any type of sympathetic depiction whatsoever. He has like an army of meth slaves, and he I can't believe people even find him in any way sympathetic. He's a monster, and I'm glad he's in jail. And I wish one of his tigers would have eaten him.
He is 100% a monster. The thing that I was like putting on my feminist hat about was Doc Antle, who runs that cult.
Yes.
And they sort of made him like the voice of reason, even though he had like underage slave women. And I was like, I would watch an entire documentary about this man and his slave girlfriend that he, you know, emotionally abuses.
As long as it ends with him in jail, I'm fine with it. But like, yeah. I was just like, yeah, I can't believe we're in an era of very irresponsible documentary making, I think. Erin Lee Carr is a bright spot of documentary filmmaking in this day and age. But she did Price of Gold, and she did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she's great. But like this, I just was like, oh, God, why are we trying to make... And if Halloween happens this year, there's going to be so many idiots dressed up like Joe Exotic, and I'm going to probably drink too much and go up to some of them and be like, you know, you're a racist and a misogynist, and it's just going to be bad.
That's, you know what, though? What you guys said is so true, because normally, whether it's like, I have my friends at the different shops in town or my neighbor, and we talk about shows. And well, my neighbor has COVID, so she's resting up. But I've gotten my husband to start watching 90 Day Fiancé with me. And here's the problem. It's like trying to make fetch happen. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm like, come on, let's watch it. And he won't watch 90 Day Fiancé, but he does think pillow talk is funny when the old couples make fun of the new couples. And there are some, he'll like be on his computer and be like, wait, what do we call that guy again? And I'm like, the sex tourist. He's like, yeah, that's it.
Oh, is that Big Ed?
Yeah, Big Ed. Okay. And so it's like, it's become this very fun thing for me, though. And I'm like, it's coming on. Are you excited? He's like, I mean, okay. It's better than watching The Masters from 2009.
Yeah, I can think of almost anything would be better than watching old golf.
No, but Erin, it's like you said, I'm always stoked to watch it like as it's happening. Like I'm fine with The Masters. I think it's exciting. It's like, is Phil Mickelson going to choke again? I don't know. But like watching the old ones, it's like, that's just a bridge too far.
Yeah.
My favorite, again, like trying to find like the way a meme unites, my favorite way to like feel connected with my little sisters in Chicago is we've been doing TikTok dances together.
I've been following you. Funny.
Thank you. Like, I apologize. I'm very sorry. My little sister is like an actual dancer. Like she like dances like in high school, and like that was like her thing in college and whatever. So she learns them in like 30 seconds. She watches it and she's like, yeah, I got it. And then I try and it takes me 6 hours of heaving sweat and chugging water. But it like doing an activity with someone feels more connective than just like Zooming. It feels like we have a common goal. And we're working together, and it made me feel very connected to her in a good way.
You know what I want to see? I want to see you bust out those matching overalls that your family all wore in that picture that you posted and do TikTok dances that way, because I think I would like to see a family dance troupe, a TikTok family dance troupe.
I keep trying, because my little sister is quarantining with my parents in the suburbs, and I kept trying to get her to force my parents to do TikToks. I feel like kids making their parents do TikToks is quality content, and I want it. I want it with
my
parents.
It might be seen as exploitative, but I was going to tell you, my sister, also a dancer, like, won awards. I mean, danced with, you know, Savion Glover on Broadway. So, but I love to dance. And so you just have to tell your sister, as I do, that enthusiasm trumps skill.
Yeah. Well, she very gently and very sweetly wears like the baggiest sweatpants she can and goes
I saw that too.
At 20% to make me not look too bad. She really is, like, you could tell, just really keeping it in. And I'm giving it my full earnest hardest effort.
The dog barks at me when I dance, so that's all you guys need to know. Okay, guys, let's take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk Sanity Corner.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. Before we get to Sanity Corner, a little bit of housekeeping. The coronavirus pandemic will make voting in person unsafe for months, if not years. And if we want to make sure Election Day is safe and accessible for every voter in every state, we need to do something now. That's why we're asking you to call Congress this week. Congress is back in session and will vote on a fourth coronavirus relief package. We want them to include at least $2 billion in safe election money to ensure that no one should have to choose between their right to vote and their health and safety. This will be used to require states to invest in vote by mail and early voting and make in-person polling locations safer for everyone. We get that calling anyone, let alone Congress, can be daunting, so we launched a new call tool on Vote Save America that will help connect you directly with your reps and give you a script to help you out with what you need to say. Check it out at votesaveamerica.com/call. And please, if this is important to you, make those calls. The future of our democracy could depend on it. And welcome back. We've reached the part of the show where we talk about ways that we are making ourselves feel normal during this extremely weird time. It is Sanity Corner. I guess if you have a Sanity Corner, listeners, and you want to let us know what it is, you can record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and email it to us, hysteria@cricut.com. You can also just write us an email it to us that way also. So I'm going to get started this week, my Sanity Corner. Alyssa, I told you a little bit about this, but I have been watching for the first time 80s and 90s big budget popcorn movies. I'm talking Total Recall. I'm talking Alien. I'm talking Karate Kid. I'm about to make Josh watch The Warriors for the first time, which he hasn't seen. And I think that's a 70s movie, but you know what I mean? Like big, fun, stupid movies that, you know, as soon as the credits start rolling, you can like smell the movie theater butter almost. Like it was made to be enjoyed in a big old AMC. And like Total Recall, God, I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger could explain the plot of that movie if you asked him to. If you asked him to and you were like, I will take the most important thing in your life away from you unless you can explain it, he would not be able to explain it. But so much fun. It's fun to just sit down and like watch a movie like that, like an old Arnold movie.
This is so embarrassing. I watched for the first time also the first Indiana Jones. I've never seen Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's a That's a fun movie.
It's a rollicking, if I can use the word, it's a rollicking film. It's so fun.
Yeah, definitely. So that's my sanity corner this week. I'm trying to think of other ones that I can include on the list. I guess like, what's one with Jamie Lee Curtis that Arnold is in?
Predator?
No, but I will watch that one. Also, Minority Report. We watched Minority Report. That was another good popcorn adventure movie.
Like, I mean, any of the Mission Impossible. I feel like when Tom Cruise is in action hero mode.
Yeah, you got. I mean, it's impossible not to love him. We recently watched Top Gun, and it was like, what a movie star.
He's good at his job.
He's really good at his job, and apparently is a very nice guy too, which, you know, problematic, but great. Anyway, so that's my sanity corner. Alyssa, do you want to go next?
Yeah, because I'm going to sort of pivot off of yours, because once you said that, it really helped me to drill down into the escapist pro-winning movies, you know? And so I've watched all the Rockies. Okay. And it's great because, so like where we live, we only have one television. So either you're going to like put headphones on and go to the bedroom and watch on your iPhone, or you're going to find something to watch together. So we have watched all the Rockies. I scream at all of them. It's like as if I don't know that Sly Stallone is going to win in the end. You know, it's like the when I went to go see Secretariat in the movie theater and me and all the five-year-olds were screaming like he was going to win. And like, that's actually the whole fucking point of the movie. But I didn't know that.
Wait, so you didn't know that he's running like a tremendous machine? You didn't know about that whole...
No, Aaron, it was years ago. I was very fucking busy on a campaign or something. I didn't know the story of Secretariat. Okay. And you know what? Good for me, because my joy was pure and unbridled in the movie theater.
Unbridled?
Unbridled. It's a pun.
Yeah. Who follows 1920s horse racing?
It was, okay. First of all, it was
like the 50s.
It was the 70s.
Later.
It was the 70s. Alyssa,
a baby.
You were alive. You were alive when it happened.
I was alive.
If I was alive, it was the 20s.
So, because you know, and I've said every week that my sanity corner is like baking and teaching myself to do things, which continues, you know, that it goes on. Like I've conquered bagels. Now I'm learning how to do shit outside. I sprayed for weeds this week. I went to the Agway. I bought the right weed killer. So we'll see if that works. I'll send pictures, but I did that. But other than that, Rocky. And then I also have to put forward the movie Miracle. About the 1980 hockey team. I've been very partial to it my whole life because their match, the U.S. hockey team's match in the Olympics against Russia happened on my birthday, February 22nd. And it's like the greatest thing. It's like everybody's overcoming shit and it's like, fuck the Russians. And so I love that movie and it makes me cry and feel good every time I watch it because I pretend like I don't know they're going to beat Russia.
That's a heavy pretend, but if you can do it, I respect
it. So my sanity corner is just suspending what I know to be true.
Dana, what's yours?
I can't cook or bake in my apartment because it's a very, very small, bad kitchen, but I still obsessively watch Bon Appetit Test Kitchen cooking videos. I find them very calming. I feel like they're my friends. I have formed this imaginary community with the members of the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen. I have strong opinions on all of their strengths and weaknesses. So I feel like that's been my sanity. But also in terms of like doing a thing that I'm not good at. I am not good at guitar, but I have a guitar. And so I'm teaching myself chords very slowly to songs that I like to sing. And alone, I'm doing like sing-alongs for myself, which has been very cathartic.
Oh, that's great.
Awesome.
I love that. And you know, you like, I'm going to show off, I'm showing my vanity right now, but it's like quarantine. So nobody, like you can cut your fingernails super short and like get the calluses and learn how to do it. And that's so exciting.
And also part of like living alone is like, I'm bad, but no one is hearing me or paying attention. So I can just like only play the embarrassing songs that I want to learn and just like practice as long as I want and just like sing like a 14-year-old in my bedroom.
Most rock and roll is like three chords. So
as I'm figuring out, not too hard.
Can you do Stairway to Heaven yet?
No. I haven't. That's not like my embarrassing place I'm starting.
Where are you starting?
I was going, this is now, I'm showing like a little bit of My Chemical Romance and like show tunes. That's like my musical taste. I like My Chemical Romance.
Show tunes. I love show tunes.
And I like musicals.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm going to make you play guitar next time I see you in person. I'm going to be like, bring your guitar. Tell me how your Trader Joe's date went. And
I'll probably be so good by then.
You're going to be a rock star and you're not going to need dating apps because the men will just come to you.
That's how being a rock star works.
Yes, exactly. Okay, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thanks for Zooming in. Thanks to Dana Schwartz for also Zooming in. And thanks to Esther Chu for the great interview. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane. And there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support and to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadina Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.